Okay, this is a review of joint theoretical papers which have been done in collaboration with Tovel Perin, Nathan Cleorin, and Sergei Zeltinkevich. Outline of this talk. At the beginning, I will give a very short summary about stably stratified turbulence, and this will give me opportunity to discuss equations, energy and flux budget equations, which we used for stably stratified flows, and we will use this also for convection. Then I will discuss a mechanism of formation of large-scale coherent structures in turbulent convection in atmospheric flows. Then we will discuss energy and flux budget theory for shear free convection, for turbulence, and for sheared convection. And finally, we will discuss a little convection in the planetary scales. Okay, so about the energy and flux budget equations. Okay, stably stratified flows is a layer heated from above, cooling from below. Shear produced turbulence. Oh, yeah. There's another one? No.
Did you say heated from above and cooled from below?
For example.
Stable.
Yeah.
Stable.
So this stably stratified flows.
Okay.
Yeah, stably stratified. Yeah. So energy is produced by shear and buoyancy, because a heat flux in stably stratified flows is directed downward. It's negative. It results in a decrease of turbulent kinetic energy. This is dissipation and transport divergence of certain moments. So in a steady state for homogeneous turbulence, we can get from here expression for kinetic energy, which is the difference between production due to the shear and destruction of kinetic energy, or decrease of kinetic energy due to the buoyancy. If we increase temperature gradient, increase buoyancy, we see that kinetic energy decreases, and it yields erroneous conclusion about existence of critical Richardson number based on energetic analysis. Of course, there is another criterion based on the Richardson number, and this criterion for linear stability analysis. But here we consider final perturbations. Okay, what is wrong here? If we speak about the stable stratified flows, it implies there are fluctuations of velocity and temperature. So energetic analysis should include budget equation not only for kinetic energy, but also for theta square fluctuations and heat flux equation. We see that here buoyancy, if z is negative, it results in decrease of kinetic energy. But on the other hand, this term, which is results in production of theta square fluctuations. So we can write equation for the theta square fluctuations using potential energy, and then equation for theta square will be written in terms of the potential energy. And we see here that the buoyancy term enters in these two equations with opposite signs. And if we add these two equations, these buoyancy terms disappears. And it yields us equation for total energy, kinetic plus potential energy. And we see that no limitations from the buoyancy to the existence of turbulence. And this is a key point, that if we consider all stably stratified flows or convection, we should consider all budget equations, not only equation for the turbulent kinetic energy. And in order to understand why turbulence is sustained even for large Richardson number for strong buoyancy, we have to consider the third budget equation for vertical heat flux. We see here that this is a classical gradient flux caused by the gradient of mean temperature, but there is additional term. This term in the first, I think, was introduced by Dierdorf for convection. And this term just rises in this equation when we take Navier-Stokes equation multiplied by theta fluctuations of temperature. So product of buoyancy force to the theta yields us this term. And we see that these two sources of fluxes enters with opposite signs. So it implies that in a steady state, we can obtain that the buoyancy flux is a sum of classical gradient transport and non-gradient transport. So we see that shear produces turbine kinetic energy. On the other hand, buoyancy decreases turbine kinetic energy, and buoyancy also increases theta square fluctuations, and it decreases buoyancy. So this is a way how to sustain stable stratified turbulence for any Richardson number. So that's this important lesson which shows us that for analysis, energetic analysis of stratified flows, we should use all budget equations. Okay, so, and waves can be included in this budget equation, just waves yields additional contributions to production of kinetic energy, potential energy, and heat flux. But we discussed this 3 weeks ago, but so the main topic today is turbulent convection. So in atmospheric turbulent convection, there are three types of motions. Fully ionized large-scale flow like a mean wind, small-scale turbulence, and long-lived large-scale coherent structures, organized structures. And there are two types of structures depending on the wind shear. If shear is small, structures have the form of cloud cells. If there is a strong shear, then we will observe roll-like structure like cloud cells. What is interesting that the lifetime and special scales for these semi-organized structures are much larger than turbulent scales. In that sense, coherent structures, this is like a mean field object. This example of cloud cells, which observed from the satellite, characteristic scale of these cells of the order of several hours, size of the order of 1 kilometer. This is another type of convective cells, and cloud serves as the visualization of large-scale structures. Yes?
Can you go back?
Yeah.
Are those the hexagonal structures what's his name
showing? Okay, but it looks like. Okay, this is open cells. Okay, if there is a strong wind, then large-scale circulations will be stretched along the wind, and so we'll observe roll-like structures, and characteristic length of this structure, about several hundred kilometers, and in cross sections, it's about 1 kilometer. So we can also observe such kind of beautiful structures, cloud streets from below. Okay, in lab experiments, also in relay binary apparatus, for large Richardson, large Rayleigh number, we can also observe large-scale circulations. For example, this our experiments in airflow and convection. So using particle image velocimetry, we can measure velocity fields, and averaging over thousands of velocity maps, we see that there are large-scale covering structures in the turbine convection. And what is interesting, that this at mean temperature field, measurements of mean temperature field, we see that inside the large-scale circulation, temperature is strongly non-uniform. So this is a hot upward flow, upward flows, and this is downward flows, and this is we show here only temperature field inside it, circulations, size of the system larger, and no imposed horizontal temperature gradient in the system. But nevertheless, because of the coherent structures, because of the shear strongly affects temperature field. We can see this.
I'm confused about your geometry here. So the right-hand side of the y-axis is in the blue part of the center of the...
Okay, this is the vertical axis, and this is the horizontal.
Right.
Just in this plane.
And so this is now a plan view from above on the left of the same structure?
Yes, the same structure. This is velocity field, and this is a temperature field.
Is it Z on the left-hand, Z going up on the left?
Yeah.
Yes, this is Z.
It's the same plane. Yeah, got it.
This is a velocity field inside the large scale circulations, and this is a temperature field. No imposed horizontal temperature gradient. Nevertheless, we see that inside the structures there is a strong horizontal gradient and very small vertical gradients. We can see, just a moment, one moment. For example, if we switch on forcing, just oscillating grids, large-scale circulation disappears, and we see how different temperature field will be in the system. So this is set up, so if we switch on forcing oscillating grids near the wall, we destroy large-scale circulation, and we see how strongly temperature field will change. This is without circulations, and this is with circulation. And here, strong vertical temperature gradient exists in this unstable stratified flows. But we see how strong difference of large-scale coherent structures to the temperature field and to all transport. Okay, so you had a question.
So
yes.
On the left, that's a time average again, right?
Yes. Okay. This is a temperature field, mean temperature field. So we measure in many locations temperature field, and then from the averaging of temperature field, we obtain a mean temperature field. We also can obtain fluctuations of temperature. But this is, I would like to demonstrate the difference in a temperature field. For example, in nature also, large-scale circulation can be disappeared due to strong rotation, or there are different reasons. But in the presence and in the absence of large-scale circulations, we have absolutely different distribution of mean temperature.
Down to convective time units was the averaging.
Okay.
Roughly.
Okay. So turbulent time there. So we measure also integral scale of turbulence. So integral scale of turbulence about 1-2 centimeters. Root mean square velocity about 10 centimeters per second. So we have here 10^-1 second turbulent time in integral scale. So averaging is performed in the time scale larger than the turbulence time, of course.
Sure. Do you know how much
larger? Okay, one order of magnitude larger. And okay, because this large scale circulation here exists long time, so we can measure.
But actually, the reason I ask is there's some interesting work that Georg Schumacher does.
Schumacher, I know him, yeah.
Of turbulent convection, among other topics. And they've shown just a classic, like, kind of Rayleigh-Binard setup in a wide domain, but at really high Rayleigh numbers. And it's very interesting. I mean, at very high Rayleigh numbers, flow is turbulent. And if they average over hundreds of convective time units, they actually see patterns that look very reminiscent of sort of weakly nonlinear patterns, hexagonal cells, and mm-hmm.
Okay, actually, okay, I will discuss.
Of course, if you average too long,
I understand.
You just get a 1D temperature profile. Yeah, yeah. So that's why.
Yes, yes. Yes, okay, of course, we use different time of averaging for this, you know, to get this. But, yeah.
So in the previous picture where you showed this large scale vortex, there is, of course, in terms of the experimental setup, there's no reason why the vortex should rotate one way versus the other way, right?
Okay, so, this is an interesting question.
So yeah, does that mean if you just capture a phase during which the average rotation goes in one way, then you get a picture like this, but then when you do the forcing, then
yes.
sometimes you have a vortex like this, and sometimes the vortex goes...
Okay, it depends. If frequency of... oscillation is very small, so we have some transitional region, and there is some. But about the direction of rotations, of course, it depends on initial conditions. But in such a system, also there is appearance of chaos in dynamical systems, in the sense that in such kind of setups, it was observed that there is large-scale centrifugal motion in one direction, then randomly. It changed direction. So if we observe long time, then we obtain that there are two attractors in the system, and we will obtain.
So that's why I was wondering then, if on the next slide, if you, on the next one.
Yeah, next one.
Next one, yes. If you take the picture on the right, and sometimes you have it this way, sometimes you have it flipped the other way, do you get something like what you have on the left?
Here, if there are no circulations, there will be only such kind of structures. So we impose strong temperature gradient. So it practically will absorb here linear gradient, gradient of the temperature, and then near the walls it would decrease.
So the picture on the left is not just something that comes about because sometimes your vortex is going this way and then sometimes...
You mean reconstruction of this?
Yeah.
No, okay, this is a steady structure. So here we impose 10 hertz to the system, so it's just kill this large-scale circulations. Of course, we study situations also when we change frequency of forcing and there was a transition region when we have more complicated structure. But here I would like to stress that how strong influence of the shear inside the large-scale coherent structures. And this should be taken into account in developing of different theories of convection.
Did you pick 10 hertz driving frequency because that was comparable to the integral time scale? You said it was shaking it.
Yes, yeah, there is a...
Did you pick that frequency because that's the integral time scale?
Okay, no, not necessarily. Just we increase frequency of forcing, and when frequency is about 5 hertz, it will kill the large-scale circulation, but it's not a resonance effect like, no, just this is a usual. For example, in direct numerical simulations, you observe large-scale circulation, and then if you include forcing in the system, you obtain similar things. Yeah.
And the integral scale on the right is much larger than the integral scale on the left.
Okay, we measure. We measure here and here integral scale also, measuring 2-point correlation functions
right.
of the velocity field. Okay. They're different, but not much. So, for example, in 1.5. So here also anisotropic situation and a vertical integral scale and horizontal, they are also different factor two. But in principle, it's not a reason that here we have another integral scale. It can be slightly changed, but here temperature, mean temperature field changed much more strongly than integral scale of turbulence. Of course, here turbulence became more anisotropic. Yeah. Okay. So, what is the problem with of explanation why in a fully developed turbulent convection, we have formation of large-scale structures. Okay, if we calculate Rayleigh number, this is a ratio of buoyancy effects to viscous and diffusion effects. Based on the molecular diffusion, we obtain atmospheric flows, Loch number 10 to the 11, 10 to the 13, which imply that they're fully developed turbulent convection. But we see that large-scale circulations are in the mean field object. So if we calculate the same number based on the turbulent transport coefficient, we obtain values which are much below the threshold for excitation, for example, laminar convection. So the equation arises here, how it's possible to form large-scale circulations in turbulent convection. After the first experiments of Howard and Krishnamurti in 1980, there was a great debate in the turbulence community. What is the reason for these large-scale circulations? Is it really just continuous transition from laminar case when we have relay of the order of 10 to the 6 nearby the threshold, and in the case when we have a very high relay number? And the conclusion was that this is a new kind of effects which excites large-scale circulations. And there are many features show that it's not the same like in the laminar convection.
Yes? If you go back, in this concept, if you go back to your original framing of the local term and the non-local terms, am I understanding you correctly that the turbulent transport coefficients here are really the local part of that?
Local.
And you're waiting for the non-local part to be large-scale coherence.
Yeah, we come.
So that, so
we
that's
come to
the
this.
And you're trying to put those two together.
Yes. 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 Okay. Yeah. But this is, we see that relay number based on effective transport coefficients much below the threshold for excitation of usual laminar convection. This is one indication that it's not simple effect of formation. So what we have here in the system? We have turbulence, fully developed turbulence, like a Kolmogorov-like turbulence. In the presence of gradient of mean velocity, we have interaction of turbulence with a gradient of mean velocity, which produces strongly anisotropic velocity fluctuations. And this is the main reason for formation, excitation of large-scale instability, and formation of covering structures, which has which have also own shear and tangling of this gradient of mean velocity by the velocity fluctuations produces these anisotropic fluctuations and excites large-scale instability.
So rotation doesn't enter this?
Sorry?
Rotation doesn't enter this at all?
Okay. Up to now, we speak about the convection in convective boundary layers. So height is not much, is not larger than 1 kilometer. Of course, for large heights of convective motions, there will be effect of rotation. But we will speak about this. Okay. Okay. Now, what is the physics of interaction between the shear and large and turbulent motions, like a Kolmogorov turbulence? So due to this simple term, U nabla U, this is a big round shear, there is a tangling of this gradient of mean velocity by the velocity fluctuations, which produces strongly anisotropic velocity fluctuations. Okay, spectrum of this anisotropic fluctuations was found long ago by Lumley, and it is different from the spectrum of usual isotropic Kolmogorov turbulence. And these anisotropic fluctuations plays a very important role in formation of large-scale structures. So if we have temperature difference between the bottom wall and upper wall, so there is a vertical heat flux, so there is a correlation between velocity and potential temperature fluctuations, which is proportional to the minus gradient of mean temperature. We see that in the previous experimental pictures, we see also that there is a strong shear which strongly affects the mean temperature field. Actually, shear also affects the heat flux. A simple mechanism, we obtained these results theoretically and then we understood what does it mean. But physics is very simple. So if we have conversion flow, we have a vertical heat flux due to the gradient of mean temperature. So in the region with a convergent flow, we have a redistribution of the vertical heat flux so that in the region of convergent flow, there will be up increase of the heat flux, increase of buoyancy, and it results in upward flows. In the regions without, in regions without flow, we will have a decrease of the heat flux and formation of downflows. So this is a simple mechanism, but it can be obtained from the theoretical analysis directly. So if we take Navier-Stokes equation and equation for the temperature, average these equations, we obtain mean field equations, and all information about the turbulence contains inside the divergence of Reynolds stresses and divergence of the heat flux. So main problem is determine the heat flux in the system. Okay, so how we obtain the previous result? So we derive equation for the velocity fluctuation, temperature fluctuations, and heat flux in K space, in the Fourier space, and then equation due to the nonlinear terms, of course, we obtain terms with the third moments, and the problem of closure of equation, turbulence equations arises. So we use the following tau, spectral tau approximation, so we have a strongly nonlinear background, so fully developed turbulence. If we impose to this turbulence gradient of mean velocity, for example, there is a deviation from the background state, and deviation of the third moments due to nonlinear terms, we express in terms of the deviation of second moments divided by some relaxation time. So in the fully developed turbulence, relaxation time is of the order of turbulent time. So this is type of closure which allows to close the system and solve this problem. For example, if we switch off this external gradient, then there is a relaxation of turbulence to the background state, and characteristic time of relaxation is of the order of turbulent time, and that's why it's used. I think that the first it was applied by Annick Fouquet under the influence of Steve Orczyk. And this procedure allows to explain many, to calculate many turbulent transport coefficients in many systems, and we check this, it works perfectly, it reproduces all well-known results obtained by other procedures like a renormalization procedure or pass integral approach or other approaches which are used for high Reynolds number system.
So
yes.
How are you defining average and
ensemble averaging?
Yeah, ensemble averaging.
Yeah. And finally, we result that we obtain that there is a renormalization of the turbulent flux, and the turbulent flux contains, first of all, gradient terms, background flux. If there is a shear, there is also contour wind flux, which was known well known long ago. Okay, where it is? Yes. Oh. Okay. I think I calculated this flux just from simple considerations. Yes, it's here. So so the simple flux, which was known well known long ago, I think from Dierdorf, is a contour wind flux. So if we have shear in the system, then due to this term which produces anisotropic fluctuations, we, from here, we can estimate the level of fluctuations due to this tangling. And then if we multiply this velocity fluctuation by theta, we obtain heat flux, which exactly contour wind flux, which arises due to the shear. This is some kind of non-gradient transport in the system. And so in the convective system, Fz is a background flux caused by the gradient of temperature. So in the presence of shear, we have change of heat flux. It says contour wind flux. So it's well known, and we also reproduce this heat flux.
Sorry.
Yes?
A notation question. I have a hard time understanding what's your delta U. Your delta U.
Delta U is just this estimate. This estimate for turbulent velocity caused by the tangling of the gradient of mean velocity by velocity fluctuations. So this is a turbulent time.
So in what sense is it different from U prime? Like when you do Reynolds decomposition.
No. It's not. This is estimate. I only would like to just obtain this contour wind flux from a simple consideration.
Okay.
Yeah. But so of course, Reynolds decomposition. We decompose velocity fluctuations of velocity and mean fields.
Yes.
But if we don't have gradient of mean velocity, we have an isotropic homogeneous turbulence. If we impose gradient of mean velocity, then it results due to this term U nabla due to this term it results in tangling of gradient of mean velocity by velocity fluctuations. It's produced additional anisotropic fluctuations. So here we have isotropic part and anisotropic part in turbulence. So that's it.
Adds up to the fluctuations. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, this is some kind of interpretations. Exact calculations show that indeed we have here in the system this term, which describes convergent effect of convergent flows to modification of the heat flux. If we substitute this heat flux to the mean field equations and study this mean field equations, we find that there is instability in the system, which results in formation of convective large-scale coherent structures, and the maximum growth rate, characteristic scale at which maximum growth rate is much larger than the integral scale of turbulence. This implies that this is really a large-scale instability, and characteristic time of development of this instability is much larger than the characteristic turbulence scale. Okay, we studied this instability and showed that effective Rayleigh number for excitation of this instability is much smaller and satisfy this, much more. Okay, and then we calculate, just extracted from theoretical predictions, parameters which can be compared with observations. So we see that even aspect ratio of the structures is in agreement, and ratio of the minimum size of structures to the maximum scale of turbulent motions, lifetime of the order of inverse growth rate of systems, so several hours. So there is some, at least what is doing here makes sense. So if we have strong wind, then I said that instead of convective cells, we have roll-like structure stretched along the wind. This is also, yes. So if we have wind, we have a contour wind flux, which I discussed before. This is another letter for you in this picture for heat flux. Fine, but it doesn't matter. So if there is a wind, there is a contour wind flux, and in the direction of this contour wind flux with perturbations of vorticity, immediately produces increase of the heat flux in the regions between the perturbations of vertical vorticity, and it results in excitation of upward flow here, in downward flow here, and this also excites instability in the system, which results in formation of roll-like structure, like this, and there are some indications from observations of this covariant structures that the theory which we presented makes sense. For example, we found that this instability also have oscillations which propagate perpendicular to cloud streets, and this is also was observed in observations for these structures. Also, there is some angle, small angle between direction of wind and axis of these structures. This angle is about 15 degrees, and in principle, a detailed study of the instability shows that the growth rate hit the maximum at some angle which was about 15 degrees. So at least some comparisons show that this kind of theory makes sense. Yeah.
So 15 degrees off of the wind in a non-rotating system?
No, this is non-rotating system. Up to now, this is rotation doesn't play important role. Rotation plays an important role. Rotation, first of all, can determine the height of the convective boundary layer, and rotation will play important role in the plane career.
So how do you know whether symmetry breaks to the right or the left of the wind to 15 degrees?
Mm. Oh God, I don't know. Okay, well, this is just a detailed features of this instability to show that, yeah. But okay, here is not a rotation done fact.
Just to clarify.
So maybe it's a fact, yeah.
So just okay. To clarify, I just want to clarify, you don't have Coriolis in here.
Okay, up to now, okay, in order to understand the formation of the coherent structures, we have not included Coriolis force to the system, but we study also formation of structure in the presence of rotation. I will speak about this later. Okay? Okay, now, what kind of turbulence we have here in convective boundary layer? Or in convective system in atmosphere, we have surface layer where low part of surface layers is just a classical layer which is determined by the shear near the surface. Then when buoyancy plays a more important role, the turbulence changes directly in surface layer. And of course there is a CBL core, convective boundary layer core, caused by the large scale circulations which determines transport of energy, the production of turbulence is caused here also due to the shear of covariant structures, and there is a turbulent entrainment layer at the upper part of the system where it is a standard 35. So when we build a theory of turbulence for stable for convective boundary system, we used budget equation for kinetic energy for fluctuations of temperature and the heat flux, as well as we used for stable 35 flows, and we include the shear in convective in the CBL core. We include the large scale structures in effect of shear by large scale structures when we describe turbulence in convective CBL core. And also, using the previous mechanism, we can determine here, this is for shear free convection, we can determine here the structure. The structures of the velocity field and temperature field inside the convective covariant structures. Of course, this is a solution of linearized equations. Of course, in a fully nonlinear case, it can be not there. The form can be strongly different, but very often when we study instability and in the vicinity of the maximum growth rate, these modes can survive also in nonlinear case. So at least as a first approximation, we use in order to calculate production caused by the shear, we used this form of alias, and it allows us to determine the ratio of turbine kinetic energy to kinetic energy of motion inside the large scale circulations, ratio of temperature fluctuations, turbine temperature fluctuations to temperature, mean temperature inside the large scale circulations. Most important, okay, and other characteristics can be determined from this part. Most important, this. The vertical gradient of mean temperature.
Question. So yes. The kinetic energy of the coherent structures, is that coming from the change in the buoyancy production term, or is that
yes.
shear production is not playing
Okay. Here, of course, inside the coherent structures, for shear free convection, when there is no wind or wind gradient,
yeah.
there is only shear production due to the shear caused by the coherent structures. And of course, there is a buoyancy production. Also, by the way, our measurements of production inside the coherent structures show that production due to the buoyancy is very important only in the updrafts and downdrafts in these regions. But production caused by the shear plays a very, very important role. Of course, it depends on the Rayleigh number in the system. But we think that taking into account the shear caused by the large-scale circulations is a crucial point in developing of any series of closure series for turbulence in turbine production.
And where is that in these equations?
Sorry?
Where is the production from shear?
Okay, we calculated production caused by the, what is here? I haven't shown here. Maybe I can put here. Production. I will show you. Okay, but most important this. Everyone who performed any simulations in turbine convections knows that inside the large scale circulations, vertical temperature gradient is strongly decreased. And even there are regions inside the large scale circulations where there is even stable 35 flows. Our calculations show that really, really here, temperature gradient can be strongly decreased inside the coherent structures due to, for example, due to the contra wind flux, and we can explain this fact of strong decrease of mean temperature gradient inside the coherent structures. Yes, okay, so.
Does it work in that case?
Sorry?
So if you go back to the lab case.
The lab case.
So now you have a prediction for D temperature DZ.
Yes.
And
yes.
Now in this right hand side you have a relatively weak D temperature DZ.
Yes.
But
the same analysis which we use for atmospheric turbulence will also apply for lab experiments and show that the theory which we developed is can explain detailed results of lab experiments.
And that's including an externally forced shear? Or is the shear actually coming from this large scale structure?
Okay, here there is no forcing in this system.
Right.
Yeah? So
right.
This is without forcing. So we have production in the system caused by the buoyancy and caused by the shear. We measure it, since we measure elastic field detailedly, we can calculate production caused by the shear. And distribution of production in the world. Yes.
So you've verbally made a strong point that in a fully convective flow, that the shear at the surface due to the motion of the large scale eddies is important. But you've said nothing about it in your theory, and I would really like to know where it is in your theory.
Oh, where is the production?
I'd like to see it in your theory. Where do you include that? How do you include that?
Yes. Let us see. So this is equation for turbine kinetic energy. This is production time. And this is U, velocity field inside the structures.
Stop. Inside the structures, is this an ensemble average equation? Because there's no mean gradients in a fully convective flow in an ensemble average sense. So I don't understand your statement.
This is a mean velocity. So mean velocity is a sum of external shear, if there is, for shear convection, plus mean velocity inside the coherent structures. We can see that velocity field inside the coherent structure like a mean field. In such a way,
I understand the concept. I don't understand the theory.
Okay. Okay. So
I don't understand how that term is a function of position.
This term, okay. When we built all mean field theory, there are slow variables and fast variables. Okay. Mean fields depends on slow variables. Fluctuations depends on fast variables.
So what is this?
This is large-scale derivative. So this is turbine kinetic energy. Yes, this is large-scale derivative of mean velocity. And this mean velocity describes coherent structures.
And the coherent structures, the linear instability analysis, to solve for the coherent structures that you had before is a slow variable linear instability.
Yes, exactly. This is instability. What's inside the slow variables for mean fields, for large-scale variables.
So that's how you got something that was larger
integral
times.
That's why at the end of here, this is a Reynolds stress, this averaging, multiplied by the mean velocity. And this velocity includes two shears. One is a external shear by the wind, other is the same. Here, for example, in the flux, we also have such kind of term. This is in some sense quantum influence in the system. So we conceptually consider large scale circulation as a mean flow. And that in this way we develop a theory, first of all, which results in formation of large scale coherent structures, and we use these results in order to build theory of turbulence. When we calculate production term from the obtained equations for the okay? Yes. Okay, so we can reproduce here and see, of course, all results for this theory are consistent with for example, in so we know from many from lab experiments, from observations, that inside the coherent structures, main transport is determined by the large-scale motions inside the structures, and only 20% contributes from the turbulence. For example, this is a flux inside the coherent structures, so we average this over the volume of these structures, and this is a turbulent flux. So the ratio of this turbulent flux to flux caused by the structures is a small parameter. It is a ratio of turbulent integral time scales multiplied by the height of the large scale circulations. And this parameter is small. And this should be obtained. This is the first check we should obtain from the theory. Also, this is some kind of Zeldorf velocity. Based on the sum of turbulent plus flux inside the structures. Yes, okay.
So wait, can you go back one? So that says that the transport by the coherent structures decreases as the size of the coherent structures increases.
Yeah. So, okay, this is a turbulent.
So how am I supposed to understand that? So I mean, if there's a big wheel going around and around and it's carrying temperature with it, the bigger that wheel is, the more temperature it carries. But it's not doing that here because you're dividing also.
Okay, this is a small parameter. This is the integral scale divided by the size of the structures. This parameter at least.
Right, that side is
minus two.
The left hand side, sorry, which one is the turbulent? Which one is the result by the coherent?
This is the turbulent.
Oh, okay, that's right.
And this is a,
no, it's the
flux inside the structures averaged over.
The bigger it gets, the more the large scale.
And of course, contribution of this much larger than this.
Yeah.
And we know that even from that experiment that this ratio is changed, depends of course on the Rayleigh number. But but actually the photospheric laws, it should be smaller. Yes. Okay, in a similar way, we construct also shear convection. And again, here we have three sources of turbulence: shear inside the semi-organized structures, the ground wind shear, and buoyancy in the system. And we must take into account all these three production to Okay, we have. Actually, this is expression. I will show you. I haven't put here the expression for production, but yes, the popular is this. Okay. Okay. Yes. In such a way, we built a theory, a turbulence theory, energy and flux budget theory, for different layers, for the surface layers, for the CBL core. We develop a turbulence theory and determine all possible turbulent characteristics. Of course, surface layers reproduce all well-known relations based on the dimensional analysis. This theory was built by Zeltikevich and by Kiley-Long, and there are a lot of measurements of this, so we have agreement. We have a possibility for check of the series. But this is, we're finishing this work, it's not yet published. I mean, here, this series of convection. Okay, now I will come to the convection in a planetary scale, where rotation plays an important role. It is known that in such kind of convection, there are six large-scale circulations in the system, and there is a very interesting phenomenon, El Niño, and South oscillations. This is South oscillations is an oscillation of the surface air pressure between the tropical eastern and western Pacific Ocean. There are a lot of experimental data. This oscillation is characterized by South Oscillation Index, which is measured, and this is a time series for this South Oscillation Index. And what is interesting that you would perform for your information of this, that characteristic time scales here changes from several years to 15 or 30 years. There were a lot of attempts to explain behavior of this South Oscillation Index using classical Rossby waves. These are two-dimensional waves. Rossby waves can be obtained in a shallow water approximation or in a better plane approximation, or they can be obtained from the usual analysis in spherical geometry. Usually for these waves, radial velocity tends to zero, but classical Rossby waves cannot explain the time scale of the order of several years. Maximum time scales for classical two-dimensional Rossby waves is 100 days. Okay, this is a global motions, so instead of...
Talk about ocean or atmospheric, I'm sorry.
Sorry?
Those are atmospheric Rossby waves?
Yes.
So, I mean, ANSU is a couple.
Yeah, of course.
So you can't ignore it.
Coupling of the nonlinear coupling in the classical Rossby waves can give you a larger time scale. Yes. Well, this is traditional. Now we present the theory without any nonlinear coupling. We can explain this just taking into account that, first of all, the homogeneity of density plays a crucial role for Rossby waves, and if we so this is a usual system of equations written in Wisniewski approximation, but using the condition of unelastic approximation, where we take into account in the continuity equation also density here, because here there's the large scale motions, and then we found that there is a new type of Rossby waves, Rossby waves, which have time scale periods of several years. And these three-dimensional Rossby waves have non-zero radial velocity, and they are excited by convection
large scale convection in the system.
Is the how are you forcing the convection? The temperature difference is constant over the whole planet, below to aloft. So the Rayleigh number is constant over the whole planet, so that the lower temperature and upper temperature ratio or something like that is fixed over. So you don't have a tropics and a
yes. But there is a, it's known that there is a large scale convection, planetary convection in the system. This convection was studied in many studies, and it was found that there are large scale cells. And so this is about six cells, three in every hemisphere, and which apply that in terms of the analysis using spherical function, L equals 6 here in the system. What we did. First of all, we don't use any shallow water approximation. We use just in spherical geometry. The difference between previous theory that we take into account, we work in anelastic approximation. So each Mach number is small. This approximation works very good. And we use so we write equation for radial component of velocity, radial component of vorticity, and theta. And this is non-axisymmetric flow. So we seek a solution in the form of spherical functions, which are actually product of the Legendre function by exponent a, I, and phi. And we seek for non-axisymmetric modes here. And we found, just analyzing this system of equation, that there are three-dimensional slow Rossby waves, which depends on the density stratification scale. For incompressible flow, this frequency tends to zero. And we also found instability in the system, which excites these slow Rossby waves. And finally, we obtained the time scales, which are consistent with absorbed time scales, of these south oscillations, and absorbed time and special scales for these oscillations. And so here, rotation, of course, plays a crucial role in the system. And this instability is excited due to the thermal energy of convective motions. And the rule of turbulence here only just these Rossby waves can dissipate. So this is a study of planetary large scale convection and other modes in the system. Okay, so I think we come to conclusions. So here we discussed mechanism of formation of large-scale coherent structures, and shear plays a crucial role in the series of convection. We use energy and flux budget equations in this theory for shear-free convection and shear convection, and we also discussed convection in planetary scales, where rotation really plays a very important role. And then can explain south oscillations absorbed in the system. Okay, thank you very much.
Yes. So for that last topic, I mean, can you claim that these are more significant than, let's say, random walk as a building block for your red spectrum?
No, I'd like to say that even in not invoking any nonlinear interaction between nodes, we can get frequent time scales of the order of several years. And we use original system, just we make extension for anelastic, and these waves depends on the density stratification scales, but this is a large scale function.
Yeah, that's not my question. My question is whether you have any evidence that this mechanism plays a role in.
We made this work recently and published in
setting the observed spectrum of the.
We compare time scale, special scale, with the observed south oscillations, which are in green. We published this paper
last year, just at the end of 17. So it's not, we have time to discuss. Yeah, we discussed this with a specialist which has studied Rossby waves, like Vladimir Tetlin and other people which are working in this field more intensively, and they were satisfied. Okay, we haven't yet. done this work recently. We haven't managed to be satisfied. But at least, yeah, it looks reasonable, and we had some experience for development of theory of differential rotation in the stratigraphical systems, which allowed us to make this, to perform this work. Use now mathematical tools.
So what picks up those four vertical link scales?
Okay.
Because we have
a regular wave number here. We have a regular wave number. Yeah. So this is a So these are vertical scales for this. So this yields the height of the order of 10 kilometers like this. So these are typical sizes for such kind of systems.
But if you were exciting a wave whose vertical scale was, say, 14 kilometers, then you'd get a different period.
This is the dependence of period versus the ratio of vertical scale structures divided by the density stratification scales. So we see that there is some dependence. If we increase vertical scale, we decrease period of oscillation. But in any case, this is in years. It's of the order of one or several years, in any case. So it's not 100 days, which yields usual direction of Rossby waves.
So could you use your EFB theory to describe a hurricane?
To describe
a hurricane? Where the hurricane is the large scale?
It's very strong. So this is a situation with a very strong gradients of temperature and velocity field. Okay, but this is what I would like to say, that already in the atmospheric community, energy flux body theory is becoming very popular, and people try to use this for different kind of analysis, for weather predictions, and this is a very more cheaper population than people did before, and at least this. Well, the convection, of course, it's more complicated. We haven't yet published papers on this. Just we talk about it, but we were finishing the papers. But we discuss already this community.
So a related question. So have you started to consider phase change at all? So latent heat release. So I mean, and obviously in atmospheric convection, you can see clouds because they're not moist water vapor anymore.
Yes.
So how do you?
In principle, yeah. We also incorporated moisture in the system in energy flux budgets. There are additional equations for moisture flux, and. Yeah, we haven't yet published this, but we're doing this. And there are additional effects caused by the motion. Yes, but this is more complicated. But at least we formulated all equations and performed analysis. Yes.
Can you explain what's the physics that makes those Rossby waves slower than the normal Rossby wave?
Uh-huh.
I don't get that. Is that the PV gradient is different?
So first, here, density, the magnitude of density plays an important role. So continuity equations is not divergence equal zero, but analog. This is the first part. The second, radial motions plays a role here for Rossby waves.
for use of classical Rossby waves to dimensional radial velocity tends to zero. These waves are interact. This is non-axisymmetric modes in the system, which implies that m equal 1 or 2 for these modes. And these modes are excited in the system with convection, which also is described by this equation, but large-scale convection is the axisymmetric solution of this system. And most important, we use this explicitly, that L squared, much larger than unity, we have six convective cells. So L equals 6 here. Yeah.
Oh, you see, those modes are global. Those modes.
This is global. Yeah.
They go from pole to pole.
Sorry.
Your modes, they go from pole to pole.
Yeah. This is global. But
those cells are not convectively driven.
Sorry.
Those cells there, they are not convectively driven.
These are six cells, it's just large scale planetary convection.
Except for the two thermally indirect ones.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, there are only really two which are, and that could be argued against, two, there are only two which are driven by convection, right?
Oh, okay.
The others are.
To be honest, we don't study deeply this convection. Here, our main interest was just to study Rossby waves, slow three-dimensional Rossby waves, and we found that the energy comes from convection, from buoyancy, at least all. This is thermal energy, which excites these modes. But we haven't yet studied just using this this system. Just this convective motion. So, okay, they call them, okay, this is large scale circulation. So, your point is that they are not all caused by the convection.
Yes.
This is your point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe you would say that baroclinic processes and convective processes you're not distinguishing.
Yeah.
You would call it baroclinic type of convection.
Yeah. Well, okay, fine. We haven't used actually this explicitly in the solution of the system. Just we can see the general system and use.
So, what is your theta equilibrium, your equilibrium temperature profile look like? Does it look like a dry adiabat?
Okay, what is equilibrium here?
So the vertical stratification.
Actually, this Brunn-Weissel frequency is determined in linear stage. Okay, so it is not based on the equilibrium value. It just suggests that during the linear stage, there will be some Brunn-Weissel frequency determined by the final gradient of mean temperature.
Right.
Yeah. And right. We, yes. But actually we see that frequency of this mode is not is a dependent of Brunn-Weissel frequency in the sense.
Well no, because your H rho is not.
H rho is just density stratification scale.
Yeah, so that depends on Rabbi.
Yeah, this is a key point. So without just analyzing the density stratification for this mode, H rho, it tends to zero, we have zero frequency. Yeah. Okay. Of course, it's not arguing zero.
All right,
but at least we just can explain time scales on the basis of just without working just nonlinear interaction between the modes, which people very often use to explain Gaussian oscillations. So this is some kind of alternative. How it's good or bad, we don't know yet.
Okay.
But at least this is something.
Good.
Okay.